Welcome. Today we're going to examine Senate Bill 6346, the so-called Millionaire's Tax. We're going to examine this from a biblical worldview perspective. This is one of the most significant pieces of legislation to come before the Washington State Legislature in decades, and it deserves careful, thorough analysis. I'm speaking to you today on behalf of FPIW Action, and over the next 40 minutes or so, we're going to dig deep into what the bill really means for our state, our families, and our faith communities. Let me start with the big idea that frames everything we're going to discuss today. Senate Bill 6346 is not just a tax policy debate. It's not simply about numbers on a spreadsheet or revenue projections. This bill represents a fundamental worldview conflict about justice, about the proper authority of government, about property rights, and about who should care for the vulnerable in our society. Those are deeply biblical questions, and that's why we must bring a biblical framework to bear on this issue. Here's the tension we face as Washington citizens. We have two competing visions for our state's future. On the one side, we have a vision of government that targets the wealthy, taking more from high earners in order to fund expanded government services. And on the other side, we have a vision of society that honors property rights, pursues equal justice under the law, and protects a space for voluntary charity, especially from families, churches, and civil society. Those two visions cannot ultimately coexist. One will prevail, and Senate Bill 6346 is a major step towards the first vision: expanded government power and diminished private stewardship. So what exactly is Senate Bill 6346? Let me give you the technical details. First, it imposes a 9.9% tax on what bills call Washington taxable income over $1 million. Second, it takes effect on January 1st, 2028, assuming it survives legal challenges. Third, supporters claim it will affect less than 1% of households, approximately 30,000 taxpayers across the state. And fourth, the fiscal projections estimated this tax will generate are about $3.7 billion annually in new revenue for the state. Now, that may sound narrow and targeted, but as we'll see, the actual impact is far broader and far more dangerous than those talking points suggest. The bill's sponsors claim that this tax is necessary to fund important priorities. Specifically, they say the money will go towards K-12 education, healthcare, and higher education. It will support the Working Families Tax Credit, a cash payment program for low-income households. It will reduce the sales tax on personal hygiene products, and it will provide occupation tax relief for small business. Now, these all sound like worthy goals, but here's the critical question we must ask from a biblical worldview. Does the manner in which this bill pursues those goals honor God's design for justice, government, and human flourishing? That's what we're here to answer today. Let's turn now to part one of our analysis, a biblical worldview framework for evaluating Senate Bill 6346. First, let's establish the biblical foundation for civil authority and taxation. Romans chapter 13, verses 1 through 7 makes clear that civil government is instituted by God and has legitimate authority to collect taxes for its proper functions. Paul writes that the governing authority is God's servant for your good, meaning government exists to do justice, maintain order, and protect the innocent. And in that capacity, government has authority to collect revenue, what Paul calls as taxes and revenues. So the mere fact that government taxes Washington state citizens is not in itself unbiblical. But here's the critical point. The question before us is not, can government tax? The question is, does this tax respect the bounds of justice, the rule of law, and the consent of those governed? That's where Senate Bill 6346 runs into serious biblical problems. Let me show you why. The first major biblical issue is justice and partiality. Scripture repeatedly and emphatically forbids partiality in the administration of the law, whether partiality towards the rich or partiality towards the poor. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 15 commands, "Do not pervert justice. Do not show partiality to the poor or favoritism to the great, but judge your neighbor fairly." And Exodus chapter 23, verses 2 and 3 reinforces this. We are not to follow the crowd in doing wrong, and we are not to show favoritism to a poor person in a lawsuit simply because they are poor. The principle is clear. Justice requires equal treatment under the law. The law must not be twisted to favor one group over another. Now look at how Senate Bill 6346 is explicitly designed. The sponsors openly celebrate that this bill targets the, quote, wealthiest households, less than 1% of the population. They emphasize over and over that everyone else will receive benefits without bearing the burden. This is not incidental. This is the entire political strategy. Single out a small, politically unpopular group for a large new tax and use that money to purchase favor with everyone else. From a biblical perspective, this is structural partiality. It's using the law to redistribute based on class rather than administering equal justice. And that violates the biblical standard of impartial laws. The second biblical principle at stake is property and stewardship. Scripture treats private property as a real moral category. The eighth commandment says, "You shall not steal," which presupposes that individuals own things and that taking what belongs to another is wrong. In 1 Kings chapter 21, we see the story of Naboth's vineyard, where King Ahab covets land that belongs to Naboth. Even though Ahab is the king, God condemns him for seizing Naboth's property. And in Acts chapter 5, Peter tells Ananias and Sapphira that their property belonged to you before they sold it, affirming that private ownership is legitimate. The biblical framework then is that people have a God-given right to fruit of their labor, and civil government must respect that right. Third, Scripture warns against overtaxation by civil authorities. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, the people of Israel demand a king, and the prophet Samuel warns them about what will happen. He says, "The king will take a tenth of their grain, their flocks, their herds, and eventually you yourselves will become his slaves." Now notice Samuel describes taking a tenth as oppressive. That's significant. The biblical tithe to God was 10%. But when a human king takes 10%, it's treated as the beginning of tyranny. The warning is clear. Governments that continually expand their claim on people's properties are moving in the direction of oppression. So what does Senate Bill 6346 actually do in terms of the tax burden? Let's be specific. This bill imposes a 9.9% state income tax on top of existing federal and state taxes. That means affected taxpayers will face federal income tax, which can be as high as 37% on ordinary income, plus this new 9.9% Washington state income tax, plus Washington's existing 7% capital gains tax on certain investment income. And critically, Senate Bill 6346 does not allow loss carry forwards under this new tax code. So if you have a bad year and lose money, you can't offset that against future years for purposes of this tax. Add it all up, and you're looking at a combined marginal tax rate of approximately 50% or more on income above $1 million. Is that overtaxation? I believe a strong biblical case can be made that it is. Fourth, let's talk about charity and care for the vulnerable. This is where Senate Bill 6346 does some of the most significant and most under-discussed damage. From a biblical perspective, care for the poor, for the widows, and for the orphans, for vulnerable is first and foremost the responsibilities of families and the church. 1 Timothy 5:8 says that anyone who does not provide for his own relatives has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. James chapter 1 verse 27 defines pure religion as caring for orphans and widows in their distress. Acts chapter 2 and 4 show the early church voluntarily sharing resources to meet one another's needs. Throughout scripture, charity is voluntary and personal, rooted in families and faith communities, not centralized in the state or in government. Now, here's what Senate Bill 6346 does to charitable giving. The bill caps the state charitable deduction at $100,000 per person, or $100,000 combined for married couples. That means if you're married and you give $200,000 to your church or to a Christian ministry, you can only deduct $100,000 of that for purposes of calculating your Washington taxable income. The other $100,000 gets taxed at 9.9%, meaning you effectively lose nearly $10,000 in potential tax savings. The federal law allows much larger charitable deductions, but Washington is deliberately decoupling from federal law and capping the benefit. What does that do? It raises after-tax costs of large charitable gifts. And when you raise the cost of something, you get less of it. Let's be concrete about who gets hurt. Churches, Christian schools, and faith-based ministries that rely on major donors, gifts of $100,000, $250,000, or $500,000 or more, will face a significant reduction in large donations. That means less capacity to fund church building projects, reduced support for Christian schools and colleges, decreased funding for mission work and ministry expansion. And where does that money go instead? Into the state general fund to be spent by government bureaucrats on government programs. So here's the structural shift of Senate Bill 6346 creates. The bill privileges state-run programs over church and voluntary charity. It makes it more expensive to give to your church and more attractive to let the government handle social welfare. This is a direct contradiction of biblical priorities, which place charity in the hands of families, churches, and voluntary associations, not centralized government. This is not incidental. This is structural, and Senate Bill 6346 is designed to grow government and shrink the space for private, faith-based charity. The fifth biblical principle is integrity and honoring promises. Scripture teaches that rulers are bound by covenant and must keep their word. Psalm 15, verse 4 praises the person who keeps an oath even when it hurts. And 2 Samuel chapter 21 recounts how Israel suffered consequences because King Saul broke a covenant with the Gibeonites. In our constitutional order, the principle of covenant keeping means honoring constitutional limits and respecting the clearly expressed will of the people. Washington voters have rejected state income tax proposals at the ballot box repeatedly, over and over again. And our state constitution has long been understood to treat income as property, which is subject to a uniformity requirement and a 1% rate cap under Article 7, Section 1. And Senate Bill 6346 is designed to bypass voter consent and challenge those constitutional protections through litigation. From a biblical perspective, that raises serious questions about integrity and truthfulness in civil leadership. That completes part one, the biblical worldview framework. Now let's turn to part two. What are elected officials actually saying about Senate Bill 6346? We want to look at both supporters and opponents. Let's start with the supporters. Senator Jamie Peterson, a Democrat from Seattle, is the prime sponsor of this bill. Here's what he has to say in a press release after the bill passed the Senate. The millionaire tax will provide a major and sustainable funding increase for schools, healthcare, and other essential services, help fix Washington's broken tax code. That's the framing. This is about fixing a broken system and funding essential services. Senator Pedersen and other Senate Democrats also emphasized the narrow scope of the tax. Here's another quote from their official materials. Quote, less than 1% of the wealthiest households in the state would pay the millionaire tax. Households with income of $1 million and below would pay nothing. Again, the strategy is clear. Frame this as only affecting, quote, the wealthiest, while everyone else benefits. Governor Bob Ferguson has also weighed in. In December of 2025, he posted on social media, we are facing an affordability crisis. I'm committed to sending a significant portion of gains from a millionaire's tax back into the pockets of working families. So the governor frames this as a response to an affordability crisis, taking from one group and giving it to another. Now, let's hear from the opponents. The Republican leader in the Washington State Senate gave his assessment after the bill passed out of committee. It ignores the will of the people. It disregards the economic consequences it will have on our state and clearly favors certain groups over others. Notice the 3 points. Ignoring voters' will, disregarding economic harm, and favoring certain groups, which echoes the biblical concern about partiality. Former Attorney General Rob McKenna testified against this bill in committee, and he argued Senate Bill 6346 violates the state constitution's uniformity clause that defined income as property taxable at no more than 1% uniformly. McKenna's point is that the bill is unconstitutional on its face and should be challenged as such. Finally, the Washington Policy Center, a free market think tank, released this analysis. This income tax proposal is entirely about a new revenue stream, not tax reform. It will hit business owners, retirees, and anyone with investment income. Their point, despite the rhetoric about, quote, fixing the tax code, end quote, this is really just about raising more money. And the people who will actually pay are broader than just, quote, salary millionaires. We've seen the biblical framework and we've heard from the elected officials. Now let's turn to part three. What does the research tell us about the actual impact of Senate Bill 6346 on Washington citizens? First, let's answer the question, who actually pays this tax? The sponsors say it only affects millionaires, but that's misleading. The tax applies to anyone with Washington taxable income over $1 million, and that includes pass-through business owners, people who own S-corps, partnerships, or LLCs where business income flows on their personal tax return, retirees who take large distributions from retirement accounts or sell a business, anyone with a one-time spike in income, like exercising stock options or selling investment property, and investors with significant capital gains or dividend income. So this is not just hitting wealthy tech executives with million-dollar salaries, it's hitting a much broader group. Here's why that matters. The tax base is federal adjusted gross income, or AGI. AGI includes all kinds of income: business income from pass-through entities, capital gains and investment income, retirement account distributions, including required minimum distributions. A small business owner whose company has a good year and generates $1.2 million in taxable income on paper may not have that much in cash, especially if the money is being reinvested in equipment, inventory, or hiring new people. But on Senate Bill 6346, that owner now owes 9.9% on the income above $1 million, whether or not that cash is even available. That's a real problem for job creators and entrepreneurs. Second, let's talk about economic migration. This is one of the most serious unintended consequences of high, narrowly targeted income taxes. Research from multiple states shows that high earner income taxes drive out migration, especially among mobile professionals and business owners. When you impose a large new tax on a small group of people, those people have an incentive to move to a lower tax state. And for many high earners, especially tech workers, investors, and business owners, it's relatively easy to relocate to Nevada, Texas, or Florida, where there is no state income tax. The research is clear. High-income individuals do respond to state tax changes, and they do that by moving. Let me give you one conservative estimate of what that could look like. A recent analysis by the Center for American Progress Research looked at the potential revenue impact if just 25% of high earners affected by this tax decided to relocate. That would be somewhere around 40,000 people. The result? $16 billion less in statewide wages, and a $1.6 billion drop in combined state and local tax revenues, wiping out nearly half of the projected revenue gained from this tax. In other words, if even a modest number of high earners leave, the state could end up with less total revenue than before the tax was even enacted. That's the danger of chasing away your tax base. Third, let's talk specifically about the impact on small businesses. Many small businesses in Washington are structured as pass-through entities like S-Corps or LLCs. That means the business income flows onto the owner's personal tax return. Under Senate Bill 6346, the pass-through income is now subject to the 9.9% tax if it pushes the owners over $1 million in total income. That has several harmful effects. It reduces working capital available for hiring and business expansion. It penalizes business owners for reinvesting in their companies. It creates complex compliance requirements and planning burdens. And remember, there's no loss carry forward under this tax. So if your business has a bad year, you can't offset that against the good years. All of that makes it harder to start, grow, and operate a business in Washington state. Fourth, leaders in Washington's technology sector have raised specific concerns. Some tech executives and venture capitalists warn that Senate Bill 6346 could undermine the climate for innovation and investment. They worry that it discourages new investment in Washington-based startups. It makes it harder to recruit top talent to the state, and it gives other states like Texas, which has no income tax, a significant competitive advantage. Washington's tech industry has been one of our greatest economic strengths. Policies that weaken that sector have long-term consequences for everyone, not just higher earners. Fifth, let's return to the charitable giving issue. We talked earlier about the biblical concerns. Now let's look at the practical impact. The $100,000 charitable deduction cap will increase the after-tax costs of large charitable gifts. What does that mean? That means major donors will give less to churches, Christian schools, and faith-based ministries. Nonprofits that depend on large donations will see their funding decline, and more social welfare functions will shift from the private charity to government programs. This is not theoretical. Studies consistently show that charitable giving responds to tax incentives. When you cap the deduction, you reduce the giving. And that hurts the very people Senate Bill 6346 claims to help, because churches and ministries often provide more effective, more compassionate, and more personal care than government programs. Sixth, let's talk about the long-term fiscal and political risk. One of the most dangerous aspects of Senate Bill 6346 is what it sets in motion for the future. Historically, when states adopt income taxes, the pattern is clear. They start with a narrow tax on high earners. Then, over time, the thresholds get lowered, the rates go up, and the tax base expands. What begins as a millionaire's tax gradually becomes a middle-class tax. We've seen this in the state after state, and there's no reason to think Washington would be any different. Once the income tax infrastructure is in place, Once the legal precedence is established, it becomes much easier for future legislatures to expand it. That's the slippery slope. And that's why this bill is so dangerous, even if you think a narrowly targeted tax on high earners might be acceptable. Seventh, let's address the constitutional concerns directly. Opponents argue, and I believe rightly, that Senate Bill 6346 violates the Washington State Constitution. Specifically, it violates the Uniformity Clause in Article Section 1, which has been interpreted by Washington courts to treat income as property. And property taxes in Washington must be uniform, meaning the same rate applies to everyone, and cannot exceed 1%. Senate Bill 6346 imposes a 9.9% tax on income, and it applies only to people above a certain income threshold, meaning it creates a different classes of taxpayers. Both of those features appear to violate the Constitution. Now, the bill sponsors are counting on the courts to overturn or reinterpret that precedent. That's why the bill contains a severability clause, essentially admitting that if the tax itself is struck down, the whole package falls apart. But the point is, the bill is a constitutional gamble, and it's being pushed through without a constitutional amendment or voter approval. Finally, let's talk about voter will. Washington's voters have repeatedly rejected state income tax proposals. Not once, not twice, but multiple times over multiple decades. The message from the people of Washington has been clear and consistent. We do not want a state income tax. And yet, Senate Bill 6346 is designed to bypass voter approval entirely. Instead of proposing a constitutional amendment and letting the people decide, the legislature is passing this as a statute and hoping the courts will uphold it. That's not democratic. That's not transparent. And from a biblical standpoint, it's not honoring the covenant relationship between government and the governed. Let me now summarize where we've been. From a biblical worldview, Senate Bill 6346 has five major problems. First, it institutionalizes partiality by deliberately singling out one group for a large tax burden while everyone else benefits. Second, it expands government's claim on private property to a degree that approaches biblical warnings about overtaxation. Third, it structurally weakens churches and private charity by capping the charitable deduction and raising the cost of large gifts. Fourth, it circumvents constitutional limits and voter will, raising serious integrity concerns. And fifth, it risks long-term economic harm, including out-migration and reduced investment that will ultimately hurt the very people it claims to help. From a practical standpoint, the evidence is clear. Senate Bill 6346 will drive high earners and entrepreneurs out of the state. It will reduce charitable giving to churches and ministries. It will hurt small business owners by taxing working capital and creating compliance burdens. And it will create long-term fiscal instability by establishing an income tax framework that will inevitably expand over time. Those are not speculative concerns. They are grounded in research from other states and in the actual design of this bill. So here's our position at FPIW Action. Senate Bill 6346 is unjust, it's unconstitutional, and it's economically harmful. It represents overtaxation and government overreach, and it must be opposed. We believe this bill fails the test of biblical justice, violates the Washington State Constitution, and will cause serious harm to families, businesses, and charitable institutions across our state. And that's why we're calling on citizens, churches, and community leaders to stand against it. So what can you do? Let me give you four specific action steps. First, contact your state legislator. Tell them you oppose Senate Bill 6346. Be specific, be respectful, be clear. Second, share the analysis with your church, your small group, and your community. Help others understand what's at stake from a biblical perspective. Third, support constitutional litigation efforts. Organizations like the Freedom Foundation and others will likely challenge this law. Consider supporting their work. And fourth, and most importantly, pray. Pray for wisdom for our elected officials. Pray for the courts. Pray for truth, and justice will prevail. Let me close with this. We stand for equal justice under the law. We stand for limited government that respects property rights and the rules of law. We stand for biblical stewardship, where families, churches, and voluntary associations care for the vulnerable, not centralized government. And we stand for the truth that government authority is delegated by God and limited by His word. Senate Bill 6346 violates all of those principles, and that's why we must oppose it. Thank you for watching this presentation, and thank you for your time and attention. If you'd like to learn more about the Family Policy Institute of Washington or FPIW Action and our work, please visit fpiw.org or fpiwaction.org. May God grant us wisdom, courage, and perseverance as we contend for justice in our state. Like we like to say around here, go out there and defend in advance biblical values in the public square. God bless.